trade can be one of the most complicated and contentious issues in American politics. The last 2 years were marked by dueling tariffs between the U.S. and countries like China, as well as Canada and Mexico. That came after years of political backlash from both major parties to trade deals like the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But our next guest says that global trade does more good than harm here in the United States, and that we can make it even better by helping out communities that have been hurt by international trade. Fred Hochberg was chairman and president of the Export-Import Bank of the United States from 2009 until 2017. He's the author of the new book, Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, How Six Everyday Products Make the Case for Trade. That book comes out today. Fred, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be here.
How did trade become a four-letter word for many people in American politics?
Well, that's a little mystifying because I spent 8 years working for President Obama promoting exports, promoting jobs that exports support. And, of course, exports are a great driver of jobs and have driven millions upon millions of jobs in the United States. But, you know, trade got a bad rap probably back in 92 when Ross Perot talked about that giant sucking sound, and that has stuck with us. Part of the problem, Rob, is states like Wisconsin is a perfect example, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, were particularly impacted by trade and was particularly impacted by NAFTA. And they also, coincidentally, are critical states in presidential elections. So that's not a coincidence. That's, I think, a lot of the reason why this has been such a tough issue, because on both coasts, people have, you know, don't see the negative impacts in the same way.
You write that trade is a net positive for the United States, but you also say we shouldn't ignore the people who are hurt by trade. And you point, you go back to even John F. Kennedy saying, okay, when we do international trade, that's great, but we're going to have to do something a little extra special to help the people who are going to be hurt by this, who do lose jobs. Have we fallen down on that commitment, that side of the equation on trade?
Absolutely, we fell down. You know, President Kennedy had this idea of something called Trade Adjustment Assistance, TAA. They love acronyms in Washington, as you know. And it was to say, all right, what do we do to provide assistance to people who've lost their jobs or have a reduction in their income due to trade? It was a complicated program. It never was funded as fully as it should, and it was hard to navigate. However, some studies have shown that the people it did impact, it was very positive. But we need to think broader than that. We need to think about something called lifelong readiness, that people have to be ready for changes. Now, our economy is changing so fast that the idea you're going to get a job, work for a big Fortune 500 company for 30 years, get a 30-year mortgage, and your life is set, those days are over. And politicians, we have to level with people that those days are over, and you can't stop learning at age 18 or 22.
Looking at the negatives of trade is easy. You see the closed factory here, the community that lost a lot of jobs there. You say there are a lot of benefits to trade, but they don't leap out at us as much. Can you, before we dig into the individual products you get into, in general, what are some of these benefits we might not even be aware of?
So a couple of examples. Today, average households spend less than 20% of their disposable income on food and clothing. A century ago, it was more than 50%. So we have seen reductions in the cost of food, cost of clothing. Our supermarkets, as recently as in the late 70s, had maybe 9,000 items in them. They now have close to 50,000 different items, partly a lot of the fruits and vegetables and imported cheeses and imported meat. We consume more meat than we produce. So those have been great benefits. The fact is, though, when you go shopping at a store and you buy clothing inexpensively or sneakers or food, you think you're a smart shopper. You don't really realize that a part of that is because of trade has made your dollar go a lot further.
You try to bust some myths in the book. You've got an interlude in the book with myth busting, and I'm looking at myth number two right now. I wanted you to talk about that, if you would. That is, bilateral trade deficits matter. So we talk about, hey, we buy so much more stuff from country X than they buy from us. That's bad. That's often the conclusion. What do you say to that?
Well, Donald Trump is obsessed with bilateral trade deficits. You know, I cannot find a single economist, except perhaps Peter Navarro, who is obsessed with bilateral trade deficits. All that means is, when it comes to China, We buy more goods from China than they buy from us. And that's because they're giving us a good deal. We're buying inexpensive clothing, electronics, and things like that. And the iPhone's a good example, at a cheaper cost than we could produce here. So we should celebrate that. And the fact that we have a bilateral trade deficit with one country simply doesn't matter. President Trump is trying to, like, reduce the trade deficit with China, and it may pop up with Vietnam or other places. So it's not something that we should worry about. What we should worry about is the health of the economy.
But the idea is that if I'm buying a thing from China, it was made in a factory from China, and if it was made there, it wasn't made here, and then it wasn't employing somebody at a good-paying job.
But that's assuming we can make everything here. We can't. Right in the state of Wisconsin, Governor Walker tried to bring Foxconn in, provided them with lavish incentives to the tune of about $200 million a year for 15 years as the incentive to come here. And so far, the employment figures have fallen flat. The manufacturing has fallen flat. It's not something we're going to be good at making consumer electronics after that business left this country 20, 30 years ago.
Talking to Fred Hochberg about his new book. It's called Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, How Six Everyday Products Make the Case for Trade. Fred, let's get into one of those everyday products now, something that might be on our dinner table tonight, the humble taco salad. You use that to illustrate how trade brings stuff to us here in the United States.
Well, the taco salad, taco bowl is a perfect example, and partly President Trump sort of made it popular or certainly gave it a political spin when he tweeted out a photograph of him eating a taco bowl from Trump Tower during the campaign. So first of all, it's not even a Mexican dish. There was a guy named C. Elmer Doolin who met a Mexican immigrant, Gustavo, at a Texas gas station and saw these taco pies, these Frito pies. And he bought the equipment, brought it back to Disneyland, and ultimately created the taco bowl. So the taco bowl was invented at Disneyland, California, nothing to do with Mexico. And it is a perfect embodiment of trade. It's we now consume more avocados than we did 25 years ago. And in fact, coming up on Super Bowl Sunday, we're going to smash 140 million pounds of avocados into guacamole on that day alone. We consume more beef than we produce, so we import the beef. And you can enjoy a taco bowl in Alaska, to Maine, to Texas, to California, 365 days a year because we import and because we have free trade going back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico and other countries that supply us with a lot of the ingredients.
A lot of countries are very small. They don't have a lot of natural resources to work with. It's a no-brainer. They're going to have to trade for a lot of the stuff they need. There's been an idea in the United States with a lot of latitude and longitude to work with here that we can be mostly self-sufficient. They'll be better off the more self-sufficient we are. You say there's some problems there.
Well, if you pick all the countries in the world, we are probably the most self-sufficient in terms of natural resources, food, and the things we produce. It just life would not be very interesting. Instead of owning three or four or five or six shirts, you might have one shirt because they cost $100. You're not going to be able to wear multiple pair of sneakers. You're going to have less variety in your food. Give me an example. The blueberry is a great example. We used to get blueberries in this country basically July, August, September. We now import them mostly from Chile, and now blueberry consumption has doubled. So if you enjoy eating blueberries, as I do, in January, you have trade to thank. If you'd be happy just eating them 6 or 8 weeks a year, then we could be very self-sufficient. It would not be very pleasant the other 10 months of the year.
We're talking to Fred Hochberg, former chair of the U.S. Export-Import Bank, author of the new book, Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, How Six Everyday Products Make the Case for Trade. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guests about how global markets or trade deals work? Do you think free trade agreements have hurt your livelihood, your field of work? Or do you work in or own a business where you rely on international trade? What do you think the government's role should be in international trade and maybe in helping people who have lost their jobs as trade has gone global? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We pick up our conversation with Fred Hochberg. His new book is called Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the United States was right to drop out of a trade deal like the Trans-Pacific Partnership? What do you think about the impact of NAFTA over the years? Do you see international trade as overall good for the United States? For you, for that matter? Or do you think it does more harm than good? Do you have questions for our guest about how all this stuff works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Learned a thing in your book, Fred, the most American car in the world defined, you could explain how it's defined, might well be the Honda Odyssey.
The Honda Odyssey is the most American car on the road today. 75% of the Honda Odyssey is both either designed or manufactured in our country. You have to go to the number 12 to get to a quote-unquote what we think of as an American car, which is the Chevy Corvette. And it's 67% American versus 75%. Of the top 20, most of them are Hondas or Acuras, and there's a Mercedes thrown in as well. And that's because the companies realized, going back to right after World War II, believe it or not, VW was the first foreign automaker to set up shop in this country and start building cars in the United States.
Talk about the international supply chain. The Honda Odyssey and many other cars are examples of that. So is the iPhone another one of the products you talk about in the book?
Well, the fact is that's part of what I'm trying to do in this book. And in my book, Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, is to look at the iPhone, which comes from the rare earth minerals come from Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The gyroscope comes from the Netherlands. So when you turn the phone to the left, you know, upside down or whatever, the screen goes right back. The part of the iPhone that counts your number of steps you take comes from Switzerland. So that iPhone would not exist, and certainly not exist at $500, $700, or $999, were it not for global supply chains putting it together. And the other odd thing, Rob, is China's contribution is simply to assemble those parts together. It costs maybe, we don't know exactly, around $300 to bring an iPhone in wholesale costs. China's contribution is less than $10, about $8.50. And yet the entire trade deficit is tacked on to China because they're the ones who substantially changed the product and put the pieces together.
Let's talk about tariffs a little bit. Who pays for tariffs?
We do, loud and clear. Tariffs are nothing more than a tax. That's why the whole idea of tariffs was a discredited idea after the 20th century. Donald Trump is trying to apply a 20th century discredited solution to a 21st century economy, and it doesn't really work.
I should point out, we've talked about a couple of your myths here, and you'd say Donald Trump does get some things wrong. Another myth, though, is that Donald Trump is always wrong when it comes to trade. What does he get right?
Well, he gets right is that it is absolutely true. China has not been a good actor. China has helped us keep our inflation rates down, provides a lot of goods to the United States, has been much more difficult about getting our goods into China, be it movies, entertainment, the internet, financial services, and they've been a bad actor in terms of taking our intellectual property, taking the trade secrets that companies have invested in that make our U.S. companies special and unique and lets them sell globally. They want to take that without paying for it. So they have been a bad actor, and Donald Trump is right to call them out on it. The question is, will his tactics work? And that's why I think there's a lot of concern that these tactics may not work.
What would be a good tactic when you've got a powerful actor like China bending and or breaking the rules?
Well, listen, China needs the rest of the world. They need to make sales in the EU. They need to make sales in Europe, in Japan, in Australia, in the United States, in the sort of developed world. We're an important customer of Chinese goods. So together, we can also provide pressure on them to change their ways. But going it alone makes it much harder than if we have a bunch of allies.
You mentioned entertainment a moment ago, and you spend a chapter on one trade good that I wouldn't have thought of as a trade good, the HBO TV show Game of Thrones. How does that fit the story?
Well, You know, so many of our TV shows came to us, whether it's All in the Family or Homeland or Queer as Folk or came to us from other countries. And we then have adopted them, expanded them, and sell them around the world. Game of Thrones was exported to 170 countries. It provided enormous jobs for musicians, stagehands, caterers, drivers, technicians, sound technicians. And these are really good-paying jobs. The average job in the entertainment is about $93,000. These are good jobs. They're often blue-collar jobs. And I find in the trade discussion, trade war, we forget all we think about is cars and planes and heavy equipment and forget that services – and look, let's look at Wisconsin. Some great educational institutions in the state of Wisconsin that benefit from foreign students. We should be doing everything we can to have foreign students come here and study. They bring their dollars here. That's considered an export. And most importantly, they leave with an appreciation of an American way of life that they take with them for the rest of their life.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Robert is with us in Washburn. Robert, hi.
Hi there. Well, I have no problem with the last bit you said about high-paying jobs and so forth. But the earlier part about 10 minutes ago, this gee whiz consumer paradise of cheap consumer goods and iPhone rare earth minerals and cheap clothing and blueberries in December from the other side of the world. That's all. If you find that a good thing, pardon me, then it's all premised on cheap labor, lax environmental laws, inexpensive shipping from the other side of the world, and so forth. So these things might seem good from a just a blind consumer's perspective, but if you think about the people behind it, the energy behind it, the infrastructure behind it, it's not such a good thing.
Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Fred, the labor and then the environmental costs of this connected free trade world.
I think that's why I think the USMCA, the revitalized one, NAFTA Part 2, North American Free Trade Agreement Part 2, is an improvement. It improves the environmental conditions. It improves the labor and enforcement standards. And as a result, we got 385 members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, voting for it. So I think that is vitally important. And I'm hopeful that this new USMCA, which, by the way, Senator Baldwin does support strongly, that it raises the standard for future trade agreements going forward.
Thanks a lot for that call, Robert, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Fred Hochberg about his new book. It's called Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, How Six Everyday Products Make the Case for Trade. Well, Fred, since trade agreements became really politically toxic in the 2016 elections, Democrats like Bernie Sanders, Republicans like Donald Trump speaking against them, are you hopeful, being an advocate for more free trade, that can turn around?
Well, I am. For Democrats to adopt Donald Trump's playbook on trade and tariffs would be a big mistake. I think Donald Trump was wrong, and for Democrats like Bernie Sanders to follow in those footsteps is not going to bring us forward. We are living in a global, interconnected world. We have to make sure that we take care of people who get hurt. We have to make sure that people follow the rules and play by the rules, and we need to have standards around labor, around labor conditions, around the environment. Those are vitally important. But to think we can just turn our back and make everything by ourselves here at home is folly.
I want to get more into that the education side of international trade, because like a TV show like Game of Thrones, that's not something people usually, I think of on the balance sheet. We think of the steel and the cars and so on.
You know, we have seen a decline in the number of foreign students coming to study here in the United States over the last 2 years. Part of that is the cost of education. Part of that, frankly, is gun violence. And part of that is Donald Trump making a lot of foreigners not feel welcome here. But I'm going to, for a moment, settle on gun violence. Our gun issue here is no longer just a domestic issue. It impacts tourism. It impacts parents feeling comfortable sending their children to study in America. And that is a great loss to us. We need people educated in America, because when they go home, they bring our values, they bring an affiliation with the United States, they bring friendships from the United States. And I make a number of those illustrations in my book. about how many world leaders studied here, and they take that with them when they go back home. And Wisconsin is a great place for that, and we have a lot more capacity at liberal arts schools and large universities to take in more foreign students.
Fred, what would you say to political leaders as they look at trade and try to figure out what the course of the future is going to be? What's your advice to them?
My advice to them is, let's be honest about it. They're going to be winners and losers. So let's acknowledge there will be some losers. And what are the remediations? How do we support them to make sure they get back on their feet and they have the training? And the other thing we need to do as a whole country is a term that Robert Holloman, who is one of the people I talked to about the book, we need lifelong readiness. The day where you got a 30-year job and a 30-year mortgage are over. You've got to be ready to face the future, ready to take on new jobs, ready to be able to be much more flexible than our parents or grandparents. And that's something politicians and educators should be telling young people today.
Fred, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it. That's Fred Hochberg, chairman and president of the Export-Import Bank of the United States from 2009 until 2017. He joined us today to talk about his new book. It's out today. It's called Trade is Not a Four-Letter Word, How Six Everyday Products Make the Case for Trade.